The mob closed in. Grebo, struggling against a morphogenic field swinging wildly between species, punched the first man in the face with a hand and clawed the shirt off another man with something more like a giant paw.
Oh, sure!
20 hands grabbed him. And then, in the melee and the darkness, 20 hands were holding just cloth and emptiness. Vengeful boots connected with nothing more than air. Clubs that had been swung at a snarling face whirled through empty space and returned to hit their owner on the ear. Quite unnoticed in the scrum, a flat-eared bullet of grey fur shot out from between the scuffling legs. The kicking and punching stopped only when it became apparent that all the mob was attacking was itself. And since the IQ of a mob is the IQ of its most stupid member divided by the number of mobsters, it was never very clear to anyone what had happened. Obviously, they'd closed in on the ghost, and he certainly couldn't have escaped. All that was left was a mask and some torn clothing. So, the mob reasoned, he must have ended up in the river, and good riddance too. Happy in the knowledge of a job well done, they adjourned to the nearest pub. This left Sergeant Count Detritus and Corporal the Count de Knobby Knobs, who lurched to the middle of the bridge and regarded the few scraps of cloth.
Commander Vimes isn't going to like this, said Detritus. You know he likes prisoners to be alive.
Yeah, but this one would have been hung anyway, said Nobby, who was trying to stand upright. This way was just a bit more democratic. A great saving in terms of rope, not to mention wear and tear on locks and keys.
Detritus scratched his head.
Shouldn't there be some blood? He ventured.
Nobby gave him a sour look.
He couldn't have got away, he said, so don't go asking questions like that.
Only if humans is hit hard enough, there leaks all over the place, said Detritus.
Nobby sighed. That was the calibre of people you got in the watch these days. They had to make a mystery of things. In days gone by, when it had been just the old gang and an unofficial policy of laissez-faire, they'd have said a heartfelt, well done, lads, to the vigilantes, and turned in early. But now old Vimes had been promoted to commander, he seemed to be enrolling people who asked questions all the time. It was even affecting Detritus, considered by other trolls to be as dim as a dead glowworm. Detritus reached down and picked up an eye patch.
What do you think of that, then? Said Nobby scornfully. You think he turned into a bat and flew away?
Eh? I do not think that, 'cause it is inconsistent with modern policing, said Detritus.
Well, I think, said Nobby, that when you have ruled out the impossible, what is left, however improbable, ain't worth hanging around on a cold night wondering about when you could be getting on the outside of a big drink. Come on, I want to try a leg of the elephant that bit me.
Was that irony?
That was metaphor.
Detritus, uneasy in what was technically his mind, prodded at the torn pieces of clothing. Something brushed against his leg. It was a cat. It had tattered ears, one good eye, and a face like a fist with fur on it.
Hello, little cat, said Detritus.
The cat stretched and grinned.
Get lost, copper.
Detritus blinked. There are no such things as troll cats, and Detritus had never seen a cat before he'd arrived in Ankh-Morpork and discovered that they were very, very hard to eat. And he'd never heard of them talking. On the other hand, he was very much aware of his reputation as the most stupid person in the city, and he wasn't going to draw attention to a talking cat if it were going to turn out that everybody except him knew that they talked all the time. In the gutter, a few feet away, there was something white. He picked it up carefully. It looked like the mask the ghost had worn. This was probably a clue. He waved it urgently.
Hey, Nobby!
Thank you.
Something dipped through the darkness, snatched the mask from the troll's hand, and soared into the night. Corporal Knobs turned around.
Yes?
He said.
How big are birds, normally?
Oh, blimey, I don't know. Some are small, some are big, who cares?
Detritus sucked his finger.
Oh, no reason, he said. I am far too smart to be taken in by perfectly normal things.
Something squelched underfoot.
It's pretty damp down here, Walter,
said Nanny, and the air was stale and heavy and seemed to be squeezing the light from the torch. There was a dark edge to the flame.
Not far now, Mrs. Ogg.
Keys jingled in the darkness and some hinges creaked.
I found this, Mrs. Ogg. It's the ghost's secret cave.
Secret cave, eh?
You got to shut your eyes. You got to shut your eyes, said Walter urgently.
Nanny did so, but to her shame, kept a grip on the torch just in case. She said, And is the ghost in there, Walter?
No.
There was the rattle of a matchbox and some scuffling, and then,
You can open them now, Mrs. Ogg.
Nanny did so. Colour and light blurred and then swam into focus, first in her eyes and then eventually in her brain.
Oh, my,
she murmured.
Oh, my, my.
There were candles, the big flat ones used to illuminate the stage, floating in shallow bowls. The light they gave was soft and it rippled over the room like the soul of water. It glinted off the beak of a huge swan. It glittered in the eye of a vast, sagging dragon. Nanny Ogg turned slowly. Her experience of opera had not been a lengthy one, but witches pick things up quickly. And there was the winged helmet worn by Hildebrunn in the Ring of the Nibelungingung. And here was the striped pole from the Barber of Pseudopolis. And there was the pantomime horse with the humorous trapdoor from the Enchanted Piccolo. And here was opera, all piled in a heap. Once the eye had taken it all in, it had time to notice the peeling paint and rotting plaster and the general air of gentle mouldering. The decrepit props and threadbare costumes had been dumped in here because people didn't want them anywhere else. But someone did want them here. After the eye had seen the ruin, then there was time for it to see the little patches of recent repair, the careful areas of fresh paint. There was something like a desk in the tiny area of floor not occupied by the props. And then Nanny realised that it had a keyboard and a stool, and there were neat piles of paper on top of it. Walter was watching her with a big, proud grin. Nanny ambled over to the thing.
It's a harmonium, ain't it? A tiny organ.
That's right, Mrs. Ogg.
Nanny picked up one of the sheaves of paper. Her lips moved as she read the meticulous copperplate writing.